This week on Vaticano, discover a global call for peace at the Jubilee of Governments in Rome. Join the voices of the Children's Rosary as they lead in prayer, echoing faith across the continents. Explore the inner workings of Vatican authority in our deep dive into how the Holy See functions. Hear from Archbishop Ganschwein about his journey through the shifting chapters of the papacy. Witness the sacred beauty of Corpus Domini as Rome's streets become a moving expression of devotion. Vaticano starts now. Pope Leo XIV has called politicians the highest form of charity, echoing Pope Pius XI in a message to government leaders from around the world gathered at the Vatican for the Jubilee of the Governments.
We consider the service that political life renders to society and to the common good, it can truly be seen as an act of Christian love.
More than 68 national delegations attended the special Jubilee weekend, an event that reaffirms the Church's dialogue with civil authority. Among them, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and top ministers stood alongside diplomats and civil servants in the Vatican. The gathering wasn't just symbolic. Pope Leo XIV went on to warn that ignoring the cries of the poor leads to injustice and war, calling on governments to promote equitable resource distribution as a path to peace.
Those who live in extreme conditions cry out and often find no ear willing to hear their plea. This imbalance generates situations of persistent injustice, which readily lead to violence and sooner or later to the tragedy of war. Sound politics, on the other hand, by promoting the equitable distribution of resources, can offer an effective service to harmony and peace, both domestically and internationally.
The participants walked through the Holy Door of St. Peter's Basilica, symbolizing a spiritual renewal of their mission as public servants. The largest single delegation came from Italy's National Institute of Social Security, known as INPS. Over 5,000 employees traveled from every region of Italy to represent their commitment to public service. Leading the delegation was Valeria Wittenberga, Director General of INPS, who highlighted how the Church's social teaching continues to inspire their mission.
The Church's social doctrine and this new Pope's inspiration, drawn from Rerum Novarum, give us great momentum because they always lead us to place at the center the dignity of work and the dignity of the person, to understand that behind every one of our actions, there is a human being.
Francesco Militello echoed the Jubilee's theme of hope, joining not only as a leader, but as a husband and father.
It means a lot because the theme of hope is very dear to us, especially in this delicate moment in history when we see so much suffering in the world. Taking part in these occasions is, for us, a way to pray.
As evening fell, Jubilee participants gathered outside St. Peter's Square for a concert titled Harmonies of Hope. International musicians, including American jazz pianist Brad Meldow, and performers from Russia, Ukraine, Venezuela, Switzerland, Italy, and Japan took the stage in a cultural celebration of peace and unity through music. The Jubilee of the Governments concluded with the Corpus Christi Mass at St. John Lateran, followed by a solemn Eucharistic procession to St. Mary Major. During the Jubilee for Families in Rome, two American pilgrims are drawing attention, wearing t-shirts that read Children's Rosary. This is Blythe Kaufman, founder of the Children's Rosary, and her son Asher, a seminarian who grew up in the movement. Together, they're behind a simple idea that has blossomed into a global movement of prayer.
The Children's Rosary began on April 10, 2011 in West Hartford, Connecticut, in the United States.
It began with a parish in financial crisis and a mother's inspiration to bring children into prayer to help her parish church.
Maybe we should bring our children to pray for our church because the prayers of children are so strong.
From one chapel in Connecticut, the Children's Rosary has spread to over 45 countries, from Pakistan to Poland, Nigeria to Nicaragua. Children are leading the rosary in classrooms, churches, and homes.
And it's such a simple approach to prayer, which is to pick up the rosary and have children lead, that it's spreading very naturally and broadly across the world.
And in leading the prayer, children grow. Prayer becomes a foundation for faith and often for choosing one's life path and vocation.
Just as a background, I grew up Jewish because my father's Jewish. And so for me, I think one of the important things was that being part of the Children's Rosary, I was very, very conscious also of the Catholic faith and of its teachings. And I was able to really develop a relationship with our Lord that was important for later on when I decided to convert.
Asher's journey from childhood prayer to the seminary is just one of many paths shaped by this quiet devotion.
I've been discerning vocation to the priesthood with my archdiocese, and so I'll be entering seminary for college, college seminary. But before that, I'll be taking a year to do missionary work in Europe and Africa and working to spread the Children's Rosary. Work, you know, in parishes, with priests, hopefully with schools too, and really try to do our Lord's work on the ground before entering seminary.
Each decade of the Rosary plants seeds of peace, of faith, and of deep transformation in the lives of those who pray.
Here, you want your children to be pure. You want all these great virtues to be inculcated into your children, into your family. And so this is how you do it. As a mom of three children, I can say it's really hard to raise holy children today. And we need the help of our Blessed Mother and all of these graces. And so this is probably the simplest way to do that, is to come together as a family and pray every day. Well, there's this wonderful protection that you have when you pray together as a family. There's also graces that are available to families when they pray together as opposed to individually. St. Louis de Montfort, in his book, A Secret of the Rosary, talks about the fact that when you pray together in a group, you actually receive not only the graces of your own rosary, the prayers you're saying, but the other people in the rosary as well.
One family's prayer became many. Today, the Children's Rosary invites every home, every heart, to rediscover the power of praying together with children. Coming soon, discover how the Holy See functions and guides the church worldwide. While many admire the breathtaking sight of St. Peter's Basilica, few truly understand what the Holy See, often called the Vatican, actually is. Even fewer realize that the Holy See is distinct from Vatican City-State, the tiny 44-hectare territory, the smallest country in the world, where the Holy See carries out its mission.
The Pope, in order not to be subordinate to or dependent on any political power, and to be able to engage with the entire world, with its various political realities without issue, and above all to defend the faith without external influence, has always needed, throughout history, a certain autonomy from political authority.
His Excellency, Bishop Juan Ignacio Arrieta, one of today's foremost experts on canon and Vatican state law, explains to us that such an independence is guaranteed by the microscopic territory of the Vatican City, hidden behind the high walls and protected by the ancient military corps of the Pope, the Pontifical Swiss Guard, alongside the Vatican police, called the Gendarmerie. Holy See, or La Santa Sede, instead is the central governing authority of the Catholic Church, headed by the Pope, the only absolute sovereign in Europe. The mission of the Holy See is to exercise the supreme authority and jurisdiction over the Church, serving as a spiritual and administrative center for the worldwide Catholic community.
La Santa Sede, cioè, si chiama Santa...
It is called the Holy See because it is the See of Peter, the chair of Peter, so to speak, in the strict sense. And the Pope is the successor of Peter. Over time, the Holy See has developed in a broader sense. And today it refers to the set of institutions that assist the Pope in governing the Church.
The primary structure that assists the Pope in governing the Church is called the Roman Curia, a special body that helps him administer the Church worldwide. It consists of the administrative institutions of the Holy See through which the affairs of the Catholic Church are managed. The Curia is made up of 16 dicasteries, with the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith holding a central role. Especially significant during this Jubilee year is the Dicastery for Evangelization, which is responsible for organizing the celebrations. Other institutions within the Roman Curia include the judicial bodies, the Apostolic Penitentiary, the Roman Rota, and the Apostolic Signatura, as well as economic offices led by the Secretariat for the Economy. There are also various other offices, such as the Office for the Liturgical Celebrations of the Supreme Pontiff.
The most important is the Secretary of State, that, as you know, it has three sections, mainly one for the internal affairs of the Church and one for the external relationships between the Holy See and the nations, and also has a third part that is to judge the problems of the diplomatic offices.
Working in close cooperation with the Secretariat of State are 16 dicasteries, each headed by a prefect, assisted by a secretary and an undersecretary.
The dicasteries are like various departments or ministries in a state, serving the Pope in the governance of the universal Church. They are distinguished by their area of responsibility or the groups of people they deal with. For example, the dicastery for bishops, the dicastery for the clergy, the dicastery for the causes of saints, and so on.
Bishop Juan Ignacio Arrieta is not only a professor of canon law, but since 2007, he has also served as the Secretary of the Dicastery for Legislative Texts, which EWTN had the unique opportunity to visit recently. Located just off St. Peter's Square, this dicastery handles matters of canon law from across the globe.
It is a legal system that is present and enforced across all five continents and in every culture, and it must interact with very different state legal systems, such as those of the United States, the Philippines, and India. This is the distinctive feature of this church law, which is very flexible and serves to engage with different realities while remaining consistently effective across very diverse cultures.
The Holy See's influence reaches far beyond the Vatican and Rome. Recognized as a sovereign entity under international law, it maintains representatives at the United Nations offices in New York and Geneva, as well as permanent observers at UNESCO in Paris and the World Food Program in Rome. It is also empowered to establish diplomatic relations with states worldwide.
La Santa Sede è stata la prima.
The Holy See was the first to have what are now called ambassadors, a permanent diplomatic representative in a country. At the end of the 15th century, the Holy See had representatives accredited to the King of Spain and to the Doge of Venice.
Today, the Holy See maintains diplomatic relations with over 180 states and has nuncios stationed around the world.
The difference between a nuncio and an ambassador, although the name is the same, one is German, the other Latin, the key difference is that the nuncio represents the Holy See not only to the government and culture of our country, but also importantly to the local bishops and churches. In other words, the nuncio has two roles, one in diplomacy and one within the church.
His Excellency Archbishop Georg Ganschwein, former private secretary to Pope Benedict XVI, has now served as nuncio to the Baltic states for 6 months. As he emphasizes, the Holy See's centuries of diplomatic experience are an invaluable asset.
There are so many information channels from very different perspectives. This is something that is very important for decisions taken by the Pope or by the Holy See. And there is not just information, but also a valutazione, as we say in Italian, which means an assessment or evaluation of the facts.
The Holy See, operating within the Vatican City State, is one of the most influential entities in the world. It is headed by the Roman Pontiff, who, although no longer wielding the temporal power once held by the Papal States, remains immensely powerful due to the vast authority and respect he commands worldwide. For almost 30 years, he worked at the highest levels of the Vatican. Now, for the past year, he's been working on the periphery and is confronted with the reality of war on a daily basis. Archbishop Georg Ganschwein is the former private secretary of Pope Benedict XVI and served Pope Francis as prefect of the papal household for 7 years before ending his time in this role and then being sent as nuncio to Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia.
Herr Erzbischof Georg Ganschwein, herzlich willkommen hier in Rom.
In an interview with EWTN correspondent Rudolf Gehrig, the German prelate spoke about his meeting with Pope Leo XIV, his work in the Baltic states, and his reconciliation with Pope Francis.
You have been here in Rome for the Jubilee of the Holy See, where, among other things, you passed through the Holy Door together with Pope Leo XIV. How was that moment for you?
It started with a meditation in the audience hall, with Pope Leo and the cardinals present. Then we had the procession, led by the Pope with the cross. We passed through the Holy Door. This was followed by Holy Mass in the Basilica. It was an uplifting experience, simply because the Pope was there, along with all the nuncios and others.
You met the new Pope a few times already. What is your impression of him?
My first impression does not date back to this week, but to the evening he was introduced on the Loggia of Benedictions, or rather, when he introduced himself. My first impression was surprising and very positive, not only because he was wearing the stole and mozzetta again, but simply because of the way he presented himself.
As Pope Benedict's private secretary, you witnessed the papacy up close. Later, you served as prefect of the papal household under Pope Francis for 7 years. Pope Francis passed away on April 21st. Were you able to say goodbye to him? You spent many years working closely together.
Yes, it wasn't always easy. Not everything was as the press reported, that there was a big rift. That's not true. There were certain difficulties, certain tensions, but these had already been resolved by January 2024. The fact that I was subsequently appointed nuncio to the Baltic countries is certainly a result of this. But I wanted to visit Francis's tomb myself and pay my respects. I met with the Archpriest of St. Mary Major, who is a Lithuanian priest, Cardinal Rolandas Makrikas. And so I was able to pray for Pope Francis at his tomb. And that, how should I put it, brought the reconciliation to completion.
Your nunciature is in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. It is located just under 600 kilometers away from Kiev. How present is the war in Ukraine right now in your everyday life?
We have 60,000 to 70,000 Ukrainian refugees here in Vilnius. The government is spending a lot of money on Ukraine, and the atmosphere is this. What is 600 kilometers with today's possibilities? It is also just under 800 kilometers from the northern border of Estonia to the southern border of Lithuania. The people don't trust Russia, especially Putin, which is a result of the 60 years of servitude under the communist regime until 1989 or 91. You can feel that. So there is an atmospheric presence of war. But, and I say this again and again, we must not allow ourselves to be caught up in it.
So you have to make sure that people don't feel abandoned and know that the church is still there for them.
Yes, this is very important. It's about the fact that the presence of faith and the concrete presence of the church is a great help, even for non-Catholics. Because its presence is a sort of, I don't want to say guarantee, but is perceived as such. We are not left alone. We, the church, are here, and we will also help.
Super, Herr Erzbischof. Vielen Dank, dass
Thank you very much for your time, and all the best for the future.
Thanks for inviting me.
Up next, explore the rich tradition of Corpus Domini, lighting up the heart of Rome. It is one of the most beautiful and evocative liturgical celebrations to take place in the streets of Rome, the Corpus Domini procession, like the one led by Pope Leo XIV last Sunday, traces its origins to an event nearly 800 years ago in the medieval lakeside town of Bolsena, about 100 kilometers north of Rome. It was here, in 1263, that the Eucharistic miracle occurred, bringing about this liturgical feast throughout the Universal Church. A Bohemian priest, Father Peter, gripped by doubts about the real presence of Jesus in the consecrated host, was celebrating Mass in the Basilica of St. Christina, when suddenly, at the moment of consecration, the host began to bleed. After a thorough investigation, Pope Urban IV ordered that the host and altar cloth stained with miraculous blood be brought to Orvieto and put on display for public viewing. Just a year later, in 1264, Pope Urban extended the feast of Corpus Domini to the entire Catholic world with the bull Transiturus de hoc mundo. Since then, Eucharistic processions on the feast of Corpus Christi have been held throughout the world.
Of course, the procession is not part of the dogma. It's not that if we don't organize a procession, the world will collapse or the Catholic Church will collapse. That's not how this feast should be interpreted. On the other hand, the procession is indeed part of our celebration. It is a bit like how we prepare various big celebrations in the family, or we prepare for important moments in our lives. Well, then we want to celebrate.
In past centuries, the solemn procession, always presided over by the Vicar of Christ, used to be held in the Vatican.
It was always done in the area of St. Peter's Square. And before Bernini built the big wings of the colonnade, the procession took place in this kind of square that was there. Then it would be organized within the perimeter of the colonnade, going all the way up to Porta Castello. The colonnade was decorated. There were the tapestries, for example, made by Raphael, which are still part of the Vatican collections. They were all put on display to create this festive decoration.
Nowadays, a colorful procession stretches along the famous Via Merulana at the heart of Rome. It was St. John Paul II who decided to move the tradition of the Corpus Domini procession from the Vatican to the streets of Rome.
At the beginning of his pontificate, he decided to bring the procession here, starting from the Basilica of St. John Lateran, which is the Cathedral of Rome, and going up to St. Mary Major. The Pope desired to bring back this liveliness of the feast outside of the Vatican walls, to bring it back to the people, to make it a part of the popular sentiment.
For the people of Rome, walking with the consecrated host in the procession of Corpus Domini is the expression of their devotion and their faith in the Eucharist.
With the Corpus Christi procession, we emphasize the importance of the presence of Christ in the Blessed Sacrament. We go out into the streets. We go out with the Blessed Sacrament, because we believe that in this host and wine, it is not just bread and wine, but it is Christ present under the appearance of bread and wine.
In recent years, in an exceptional way, the Corpus Domini procession was brought to the outskirts of Rome. In 2018 and 2019, Pope Francis presided over the celebration in Casa Albertone and in Ostia, far from the traditional route of St. John Lateran, to draw the eyes of the world to the peripheries and their people. Now Pope Leo has brought this tradition back to the Eternal City and has taken the opportunity to address the people of Rome and the entire world with his message.
As St. Augustine writes, Christ is truly
panis qui reficit et non deficit, panis qui sumi potest, consumi non potest.
He is bread that restores and does not run short, bread that can be eaten but not exhausted. The Eucharist, in fact, is the true, real, and substantial presence of the Savior, who transforms bread into himself in order to transform us into himself. Living and life-giving, the Corpus Domini makes us the Church herself, the body of the Lord.
Corpo del Signore.